comic books, movies, TV, and more. Nerds are everywhere. It's time to assemble! It's Nerds United, a Jittery Monkey podcast. Here's your host, Greg Mahochko.
Welcome back to Nerds United, a brand new episode of your third favorite, fourth favorite maybe, comic book and movie podcast. Greg Mahochko here, your host, and broadcasting from a very special location. Let me introduce my guest a little bit. First of all, let me apologize. Maybe you were expecting this episode to be the audio commentary to Justice League War. We were going to set that up with some of my previous guests in no particular order, Justin, Mike, and Joe. But due to scheduling conflicts and whatnot, life, as I like to call it, things happen, and we were unable to get that recorded this past weekend. However, it's still on the books. It's still going to happen. So make sure that if you haven't yet, go out and get Justice League War. Watch it a couple times so you can appreciate it before we probably ruin it for you just by talking over it. But anyway, so that one's coming up. Also coming up, don't forget this weekend, ask and ye shall receive, and a friend of mine asked me to mention this if I could. This Saturday, Southern Illinois Men's Health Conference, it's down in Carterville, and oddly enough, a buddy of mine on one of the other shows, Toby and Craig, if you listen to the Good, the Bad, the podcast, or even Beyond the Square Circle, they made a point that the Men's Health Conference is sponsored by the Women for Health and Wellness. That's right, because the women want the men to live longer. But anyway, it starts at 7 o'clock with blood screenings. They're also offering a continental breakfast until 8:30. More health screenings and exhibits available. They're going to have lunch and a keynote speaker at 11:45. And the keynote speaker for this is Jeff Rose. He is a CFP. He's also a veteran. And you can check out more information. Go to, this is what I did, simenshealth.com. SIMensHealth.com or W4HW.com and get some more information on the Southern Illinois Men's Health Conference this Saturday. I've talked about it before. You know I won't be there. I will be in Cape Girardeau for the 9th annual Cape Con, Comic-Con down at the Arena Building. So make sure that if you recognize me, I'll be out there talking with hopefully some of the artists, exhibitors, vendors, and of course you, the con goer. So hopefully I get to see you out there and visit with you at the Cape Con. And I'm waiting to hear back on media credentials for Wizard World in St. Louis coming up at the first weekend of April. Busy couple of weeks here. Now let me introduce my guest for this week's episode. He is a longtime friend of mine, and it got going, oddly enough, in haunted houses. We'll explain that as we go along, but he's a podcast brother, a long time, probably the longest running and most successful, most popular podcast in Southern Illinois for the last couple of years. You may have heard of it by the name of Big Kev's View. I am sitting in the Kev Cave. I'm not sure if that's its official title, but you look around, there are bookshelves of comic books and action figures. And yes, diehard collectors, most of them, let me rephrase, some of them still in their original packaging. It is my honor, my privilege, and my pleasure to welcome to Nerds United a longtime friend and very good storyteller, Mr. Kevin Ferdelos. Kevin, welcome.
Wow, Greg, you're laying it on thick there, buddy.
I wanted people to know how awesome you were.
Well, I appreciate the awesome intro. I try to do my best to be awesome.
We have spent many hours in this house podcasting together.
Yeah, we have. We've done a lot of shows together. I mean, going back a number of years, and only recently have I kind of put Big Kev's View on hiatus, kind of an indefinite hiatus. Actually, my wife and I, one of the other crew members, have been discussing a new approach to podcasting, which you know, we're gonna see how that works out down the road. But for right now, I'm taking a little bit of a break. But whenever you you gave me the call today and was like, "Hey, want to do a show with me?" I said, "Well, sure." I mean,
was it last minute or anything?
No, I'm like, you know, yeah. Anytime I can do a show with Hooch, I'm all about it. I'll do a show with Hooch. You betcha.
And it needs to be stated, your wife or Jamie will have to be on this show eventually, because she's as nerdy as anybody else and deserves her her hour plus or her own episode.
You know, she's really into a lot of stuff that I'm kind of not into. In the comic book genres, I mean, she is the go-to for like the modern day Image titles and stuff like that. I mean, she's reading stuff that I'm like, that's really interesting. And I'm like, you know, but if they don't have capes or, you know, a spear and magic helmet, I kind of get lost along the way, but she does really well with all those. And I'm always like, you know, hey, cool. And she tells me about them, and I'm like, you know, I really like it when you give me the Reader's Digest version of like the six issues and tell me what's going on in like Wraith, you know, from IDW Comics. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that sounds really awesome. Can't wait for the audiobook.
Now, just to point out the perhaps the magnitude of the Kev Cave, again, my name, you behind you on the couch, first of all, I'm probably sitting in the most comfortable chair I've ever sat in to record Nerds United, so thank you.
Yeah.
But the blanket on the couch that you're sitting on, the blanket behind you, is Alex Ross art from Injustice. It is the Injustice team. Joker's out front, Bizarro, so I guess let's start at the very beginning.
Sure.
How long have you been, you know, actively engaged in this genre, in this medium?
Whenever I was about 5 years old, actually, I would say exactly 5 years old. And the reason why I can say that with such proximity is that
it was your birthday.
I was going to kindergarten. I was in the AM class of kindergarten. And my dad, who was recently out of the Navy, was working at a factory here in Mount Vernon. And then he was also working part-time at a grocery store that no longer exists in Mount Vernon called Harry's Market. I would go after school. My mom would pick me up from school about, you know, noonish, and we'd head over and we'd go visit Dad, who had finished his, you know, kind of like mid overnight. I mean, you want to talk about like weird shifts. The factory that he worked for had bizarre shifts. And I think he like worked midnight to 8 a.m. And then he would go into Harry's Market.
It's a little later than third shift.
Yeah. I mean, it was kind of crazy town, but he would go into Harry's Market and then he would work from like 8 a.m. until like 3 p.m. So we'd always go in to see him right after I had finished kindergarten, and mom would walk me through the store. Well, they had a spinner in the meat section. I remember it clearly.
Which is a really weird place.
Yeah. Yeah.
To put a spinning rack.
But that's where it was. It was right in front of the meat counter, the big glass meat counter. And my dad worked.
I'd like some pork chops and the flash.
Yeah. and that's kind of how it went, because we'd go back and visit Dad, and he worked back in the meat department. And I would go and I'd start looking on the spinner. And one day my mom goes, "Do you want a comic book?" And I go, "Well, sure." And I, you know,
it not was, too many 5 year olds would say no to that offer.
It was kind of weird because it never really clicked in my head. I always thought that they were there for me to look at while mom talked to dad. And so I was like, "You can take these home." And so what I did was that my mom would have me do like dusting and stuff like that around the house, maybe help her out with the vacuuming, however well a 5 year old boy can actually vacuum.
Right. And of course, this was, you know, a few years ago where the vacuums probably outweighed you.
Yeah, it was the old canister model. I mean, we're talking, this was 1976. So, anyway, the long story short was that because I would help out and do a few odd jobs around the house, mom would let me get a comic a week. Well, at the time, heck, I mean, we were talking 35 cents, you know? So every week I'd go and I'd get another comic. Well, then I found out that these stories weren't just standalone. They were ongoing. And so I was like, well, heck yeah, man. And my first book that I picked up regularly was Batman. And I was reading, you know, the adventures of Batman and Robin, you know, basically from kindergarten on up, and it just never stopped. And then, you know, I went from there to finding out about used comics and going to bookstores and sort of filtering through all the Archies and the, all the comics that I wasn't really interested in, finding all the superhero comics at the Five and Dimes and getting huge stacks up for like a dollar and going, oh man, this is the best thing ever. And, you know, it just build and build and build. And then I, you know, the toys came along and, you know, the first ones that I really hooked into were the Marvel Superpowers.
Okay.
I mean, you know, about mid 80s. And, I was like, you know, oh, wow, can I get into these? Well, by then I'd already been collecting Star Wars figures. And my mom was like, you know, well, if you start getting these superpower figures, you're not going to be able to get the Star Wars figures. Not even in competition in my book. I was like, you know, do I get Lex Luthor this week or do I get, you know, Lando Calrissian dressed in his disguise to go into Jabba's palace? Nah. I'm going to get Lex Luthor,
right?
You know,
or even more obscure, Lando dressed as Han Solo.
Yes, yeah, and don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm not disrespecting Star Wars or the Star Wars fans. I mean, I love that stuff, but I mean, to me, it was always just it was superheroes, and you know, I always liked the superheroes best that were, you know, your everyman type, which part of the reason why I got drawn into Batman. You know, you don't have any powers? No. No powers. Just incredibly fearful of villains are incredibly fearful of him. And, you know, it was like, you know, he's just a normal man that was, you know, just a bad, bad dude.
Now, could you say that Batman's superpower was his incredible wealth that allowed him to buy such wonderful toys?
Yeah, you
or
know,
build.
I thought about that a lot, and I mean, I've seen a few funnies here and there about, you know, no real superpower. What about all the millions of dollars that his parents left him? Yeah, I guess, you know, at the end of the day, that you're probably right. I think that you know, being a kajillionaire probably is a superpower. Works well for Stark.
Yeah. Of course. You know, Tony Stark doesn't have the problem of trying to maintain a secret identity.
Well, no. I mean, with Tony Stark, it was really abundantly clear whenever Stark decided to reveal his identity that he was chomping at the bit to do it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Because who doesn't want to be Iron Man? And it's like, ta-da, hey, guess what? Billionaire, philanthropist, playboy. And now guess what? I'm also Iron Man. Ta-da!
Right. Yeah, some along those lines for sure. Now you mentioned, you know, getting onto comics at age 5,
mm-hmm.
and, getting onto action figures. You said mid 80s, which would have been early teens, 14, 15,
mid 80s,
13, 14, 15,
probably a little bit younger.
Okay.
Because you got to remember again, I was born 1972.
Okay, see, I thought you said 71.
Yeah, I was born in 1972.
Trying to make you a year older than you are.
So, born in 1972. Yeah, I mean, like 10, 12. I mean, okay. I don't know. We're splitting hairs. At the end of the day, I was youngish.
Did you ever get to a point maybe in high school or something like that where you put the comics down? You're like, man, this isn't cool maybe? Or has it been really like a lifelong endeavor?
There are pictures of me in my high school yearbook wearing like a Wolverine t-shirt. You know, I never stopped. And the thing was, is that in high school, whenever I had the opportunity to get in and start taking art classes and things like that, I mean, you know, I played football. I did athletic things, but you know, my real passion in high school, as far as extracurricular, was art. and, you know, hanging out with the art kids and spending as much time as I did in the art rooms working on projects and stuff, you know, me being a comic nerd, that just made me even cooler to them, because they were like, you know, those artists are great. You know, I love Ditko. And I was like, hey, we can talk about that all day, you know?
And Ditko's one, I was just watching last night's Comic Book Men. I was watching it today over my lunch, and I don't know if you watch Comic Book Men.
When I can, yeah.
When you can. It's one that I DVR. Just, you know, I enjoy rare things that are going to come through the door. You know, so one of them was the old Spider-Man Fantastic Four board game late 70s, I think it was. But it had Steve Ditko art on it.
Yeah.
And it took me back to, you know, I got some comics when I was a kid from, I guess, you know, my uncles, you know, had held on to them and gave them to my mom and said, see if Greg likes these.
You got some hand-me-downs.
I did. And obviously they're not worth a darn, because I read them so many times I could probably, you know, when I was younger, start quoting them to you. But I recognized that art immediately, and I'd have to go back now and look, but I have a kind of a Marvel amalgamation. I think it's actually a Fantastic Four episode or issue, but it's got Daredevil, and I think it's got Thor in it. It was about Fantastic Four thinking that Daredevil had been cloned or was a robot duplicate built by Dr. Doom. So when Daredevil comes swinging over to warn the Fantastic Four about something, he you know, makes his way into the Baxter Building and they attack him. He says, "No, I'm the real me," type of thing. So it was basically a mistaken identity issue. But that art and the way, particularly that the Human Torch was drawn in that issue, and compared to that box I saw, man, that took me back to sitting on a Saturday morning waiting for pancakes and bacon and flipping through this comic book, you know. So little things like that, which I think is why comics are, or maybe not just comics, but superheroes, this entire the basis of this podcast,
right,
is so important, because one little thing can take you back and make you feel like a child again.
Yeah. Well, and what's fantastic to me is, you know, we were mentioning Ditko, and you mentioned that board game. And what's funny is that, you know, the four or five kids that lived on my block that were my age, we were all into superheroes, all of us. And I played that board game. My buddy Scotty, who lived across the street from me, had that board game. And, you know,
I've got to ask you, because they tried playing it on the show, like, hey, let's play. And it was, you know, like Brian and Walt and Ming and the guy who brought it in.
Yeah.
And they said, what's the point? The point's to get into the middle with the most amount of points as possible. Okay. And they go around and Brian's like, three. There, I'm in the middle. You know, I win.
Yeah. A lot of those were more aesthetically pleasing than challenging. Playing the Green Ghost. I mean, the Green Ghost was another one that we used to just play until the cows came home. But it was a joke of a game. I mean, there was really no challenge involved whatsoever. But it was fun to spin the ghost and see where he pointed at the end. You know, it's kind of one of those situations where, you know, as long they could have marketed anything to us, you know, if they would have come out with a Batman toaster that put the bat signal on your toast, you know, back then, which I'm sure that it exists now.
Well, I know that the Darth Vader one exists.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be surprised if the Batman or Superman emblem toaster. Yeah.
Well, I mean, we would have begged mom and dad, you know, what's this all I want for Christmas? When can I start writing my letter to Santa? I just want bat toast. Just give me bat toast. It's all I care about at this point. You know, just bat toast.
Kids back then were so easy to please.
Yeah, we didn't care.
You know, I mean, I don't have children yet, but I can't, you know, I can't imagine seeing some of the Christmas lists that come out, you know, from your typical 9, 10, 11, 12 year old.
It's fascinating because it's all electronic, and looking back, I mean, I realized that there was a few things here and there, you know, mini bikes and stuff like that that might have been considered a little bit more high end that, you know, kids would ask for whenever I was growing up. But most of the time, it was stuff that you had to use your imagination to be involved with. Now it's all electronic. I mean, it's all, you know, I this and I that, iPods, iPhones, iPads, new accessories to go with those iPads, iPhones, you know, and it's just after a while, you're just like, dude, what about stuff that requires you to sit in the floor and use your imagination? And luckily enough, my girls are way into Monster High. So they actually, you know, I don't know, I may be throwing my oldest under the bus by saying that she still sits on the floor and plays Monster High with her little sister. And I think that's cool because, you know, anything that doesn't involve texting or Facebooking or things like that, and kids are into it, heck yeah, man. And they asked for bicycles. I was like, bicycles? Holy cow.
I just know, growing up as a kid, I didn't even have Legos. I remember getting one little Lego set, and it was supposed to be like medieval knights type of thing, and it was a little prison carriage, like that they, that you use to, ferry prisoners from,
Right.
dungeon or whatever it was. But I had constructs.
Oh,
And
yeah.
I had a big box of constructs without any instructions. So basically, mom and dad were telling me, here's a bunch of stuff. Go build whatever you can with your imagination. So I did. And
Yeah.
I built, well, I didn't have X-Men action figures. I was a kid at that time where that X-Men cartoon in the early 90s was hot.
Yeah.
My buddy, he had X-Men action figures. So that was a cool thing to, go over, spend the night at his house, stay up watching Happy Gilmore, Ace Ventura, all that stuff, and eating pizza till 2 in the morning, and playing, like Wolverine and Cyclops and
Yeah.
all these action figures. I didn't have those, so I took other little nondescript little action figures and said, "All right, well, you're the shortest one, so you're Wolverine, and you look like you might be wearing a visor, so that's obviously Cyclops," and just making it up. I again, not having kids of my own, I don't know how much imagination is being used, but it doesn't seem to me that as much imagination is needed for today's kids.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's all right there. Everything under the sun, it's right there on the internet. But luckily enough, one of the things that I have been fortunate enough to kind of get back on topic a little bit, my daughters read comics, and they're kind of particular about which ones they're really into. I mean, if I hand my kids a comic and go, check this out, they'll read it over and they'll basically give me an honest critique of, you know, whether, you know, pump it or dump it, you know, and I'm like, you know, okay, cool. And sometimes it sort of made me cringe or made me a little sad because, you know, I tried to introduce them into the world of Shazam, and they were basically like, so it's a little kid that turns into a big superhero, and there's a wizard whose name is Shaz. Nah, we're not now.
They're not understanding the delicate intricacies of the character.
That's kind of how I felt.
So, while we're talking about your kids, what are they reading? I mean, what do they like to read, or does it change with the wind?
They read my oldest, Maddie, who's 14, she reads a lot of the young adult stuff. She a lot of Percy Jackson and things that I don't know the name of that I probably should. The cool thing about that is that Jamie, my wife, reads a bunch of young adult titles too. So anything that, you know, ends up in Maddie's hands usually has already been through Jamie's hands because she's already read it. You know, she introduced her to Harry Potter. You know, Maddie's burned through all the Potter books. Emmy is one of those that, you know, at her age, she's sort of kind of in between. You know, she you know, you'll see her watching, you know, TV shows, reading books sometimes with her older sister and reading stuff and watching stuff that's on the same level. And then every once in a while she'll be like, Dad, you want to watch some SpongeBob? And I'll be like, no, I want to watch some SpongeBob. Be out of your mind? Of course I want to watch some SpongeBob. What kind of question is that?
I don't know if I'm going to lose points for this. I never really got into SpongeBob.
Oh, man, I think he's hilarious.
I don't know what it is about. I find it... I guess the best way for me to describe my own personal thoughts on it, I just find him annoying.
I think that's part of the charm of SpongeBob is the fact that he's so annoying. And I get it. I mean, you know, trust me, once you have kids, which I know is coming, you know, certainly, and you're forced to sit through things like Dora the Explorer, and some of those other things, after you've paid your dues watching the shows that you absolutely don't want to watch, then what'll happen is you will I'll kind of lose my train of thought here. Anyway,
there's static on the line. Do you hear the static?
I hear the static. I don't know why we have static.
Nothing's changed.
Yeah, kind of weird, but anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's going to bleed through or not. I apologize if I've created static. But once you've paid your dues and you've had to watch the shows that really, really suck, like you're fortunate enough that whenever your kids come along, you won't have to suffer through the Teletubbies.
Yes!
I grew up... My kids grew up on Teletubbies. And I basically went through 2 or 3 years with each of them where we were watching Teletubbies. So trust me, dude. Whenever they go, you want to watch some SpongeBob? You're like, oh... Yes, I want to watch the SpongeBob because as annoying as he is, baby talking weirdos in like multicolor outfits. Oh, dude, no. SpongeBob is Othello compared to the Teletubbies.
So Batman was your first,
yes,
love as far as the comics. What I mean, just the non super. Aspect of the hero that kind of gravitated towards?
I thought that Batman was super cool. And you got to remember, too, that Batman 66 was going on, you know, with reruns. I mean, it was still pretty hot in the early 70s whenever I discovered the world of comics. So every day after school, whenever I hit first grade and was actually going until 3 o'clock with the rest of the kids instead of doing half days with the babies, I was coming home, and every day after school, I could watch Uncle Briggs on PBS, which I watched religiously, and then I would flip over when Uncle Briggs' show would end and would watch Batman, the live-action television show.
Explain to me, because I'm not – what was Uncle Briggs?
Uncle Briggs was a local guy who basically wore overalls and a button-down shirt and like an engineer's cap. And he did a local TV show out of Carbondale that was aimed at kids. And it was just – it was very similar to like the Captain Kangaroo and things like that. He showed cartoons. He showed Tennessee Tuxedo was one of the cartoons that he regularly showed. There was a few others, but – it was just Uncle Briggs was just one of those dudes that it kind of like Bozo, you know, he got kids' attention and we loved him to pieces. The Southern Illinois kids had Uncle Briggs. The Northern Illinois kids had Bozo on WGN.
And see, I don't know. I had Bozo. Maybe that's because, you know, I came along a few years later. So Uncle Briggs, then you go to Batman, Adam West.
Yeah,
and let's talk about that because first of all, I mean it's you know they've worked out a deal you know between Disney I think owned it or Paramount or the initial company works on now with Warner Brothers where we're finally going to get the entire series released on home video. We've seen progress with Batman 66 in comics the last few months, year now?
Yeah, we're up to goodness sakes, like 14 or 15, I think, on Batman 66. I haven't been reading it religiously. I don't pick it up every time. But if I see something that makes me go, oh, yeah, then I'll go ahead and I'll grab that issue. Excuse me. But, you know, and back then, that was what we had. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it was that and, like, Super Friends and stuff like that.
I used to watch the Bill Dozier Batman. I caught it on reruns, you know, in the probably up until almost 1990. So I know, you know, about the William Shakespeare bust with the button, the bat pole, and you know, I can't say that I remember each episode verbatim,
right.
But I remember it was just, you know, relatively good, clean fun.
It was a corny, you know? Good time. And, you know, kind of one of those little postscripts. And like you said at the beginning of the show, I love to tell stories. So I have to say this. We had a 1 year and 1 year only con that took place in Mount Vernon that was hosted by the JCs. And one of the big guests that came for the con was Frank Gorshin.
The Dozier Batman Riddler.
Yes. And I was working for the hotel at the time as a security officer. And so as the stars were coming in, and by the way, this con, much more star-studded than it probably should have been. And you kind of got that vibe as some of these people were coming in. John DeLancey from Star Trek The Next Generation, who played Q. I remember when DeLancey walked into the lobby, because I was standing in the lobby as DeLancey walked in, and he just sort of looked around and he says to the girl working the front desk, "Is this it?" And I just kind of looked and was like, "Oh man, oh boy, we're really in for it." But getting back to Gorshin, I kind of got put in charge of being Frank's handler. And I didn't quite understand why they wanted somebody to basically walk Frank from A to B to C, you know, take him to all the places. But I was like, you know what? I don't care. My boss at the time was a World War II veteran who used to blow up bridges. And so I was like,
when the man tells you to do something.
Yeah. I was like, you know, hey, if Jack wants me to, you know, to eat lima beans, I'm going to eat lima beans. So, you know, okay, chief. And off I went. So I found out later, though, that Adam West, who was also there, he didn't need a handler because Adam West handled himself quite well. And same deal with John DeLancey. It came down to the fact that the only person who needed a handler was Gorshin. And I found out that the reason why Frank needed a handler is that Frank wanted to basically get up in the morning, have some breakfast, go down, chit-chat with people. And he was a real, real sociable dude. But the whole time that he socialized, he would have a drink in his hand. And Frank not only would have a drink in his hand, but Frank wanted you to have a drink in your hand. And everybody he talked to, everybody he came in contact with, he was like, "Hey, buddy, nice to meet you. What's your name?" And he genuinely was interested in all these people. And by the end of the night of the first evening, I'm sitting on the patio out back of the hotel. And we're sitting at one of the little tables with the umbrella and stuff. And Frank's sitting there at the table. And he's telling me stories about filming Batman 66. And, you know, one of the things that I asked him, you know, that I you know, just had to know was, you know, "Hey, who was your favorite Catwoman?" And he went on and told me a bunch of stories about both Lee Merriweather and Eartha Kitt, who had played the Catwoman. But I had to handle Frank, because at the end of the night, when it was all said and done, when his tank finally hit empty, I ended up pretty much drag carrying him back up to his room.
And let's get to, I guess, the beginning, since you brought up the JCs.
Yeah.
And I mentioned at the very beginning that that's, you know, we got going in haunted houses. Mount Vernon JCs used to be, or the JCs Junior Chamber used to be an organization here in Mount Vernon up until just, I believe, a year ago-ish. And you are a past president. I was a past president. So we've got that. But I'll never forget. It was 2007. It was a Sunday. And I was supposed to go down to Carbondale to watch the Steelers on Sunday Night Football with a buddy of mine. You know, we were going to go down to Buffalo Wild Wings or whatever it was. I get a phone call about 4 o'clock or something from a friend of mine at the time. And she says, hey, what are you doing tonight? Oh, I'm going to go watch the Steelers game. No, you need to forget about that and come to Mount Vernon. What the hell is in Mount Vernon? Mm-hmm. She said, it's the haunted house. I'm like, so you want me to go through the haunted? No, I want you to work the haunted house.
Yeah.
All right, so it took a little bit of convincing, but then you know, I decided to come down there. I said, "What do I got to do?" She said, "Just wear black. We'll you know, take it from there." I get here, you know, they say, "All right, Hooch, you're going to be in this black maze with glow in the dark face paint on, and basically all you got to do is, you know, like pop your head out, be the floating head." Yeah. I said, "Okay, all right." So anyway, I hadn't really met you at the time until I think later on in the evening. But as it went, got to know you, you know, joined up, with the JCs but you had, or I shouldn't say have a love of that haunted house aspect because you love the horror genre.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So let's talk about that. Cause as much as, you know, there's, you know, I look around here and we were just talking, you know, when I got here about some of the new action figures that you had, obviously Walking Dead, which is very popular right now. But I mean, you go well beyond that. You're an OG, Friday the 13th, man.
Yeah. Friday the 13th was probably my first real horror love. I jumped on with Friday the 13th, and that was an interesting thing because I had a cousin that would take me to the drive-in. We used to have a drive-in here in Mount Vernon, and he would take me to the drive-in, and we would go and see a movie. And what was funny was that they would have a perfectly acceptable movie almost every time for the first film, and it was always double feature. I mean, it just, you go to the drive-in, it's double feature.
Mm-hmm. It's the way it's supposed to be at the drive-in.
So we'd go and we'd watch the first one, and it would be like, you know, something totally acceptable, you know, whatever it was at the time. We'll say Star Wars, you know, perfectly acceptable. And then the second feature would be some kind of grindhouse, you know, splatter horror crazy movie that, you know, they assumed that by the time the second feature rolled around, the kids were either going to crawl into the back seat, you know, with the pillows and the blankets and go to sleep, or, you know, you'd see that line of cars leaving with a lot of the younger kids, you know, after the first feature. Well, my cousin was cool.
Yeah.
And he would take me because he had a girlfriend at the time. I'll never forget the girlfriend. Her name was Beth. And she was hot. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
But young Kevin, like.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, I was a fan, but, my cousin would take me to the drive-in. And we'd sit through the first feature. Well, in the second feature, he'd basically be like, okay, I told your mom and dad I'd make you basically go to the back seat and, you know, and relax or whatever. And so just go back there and lay down. And, you know, when the other movie's over, then we'll go. Well, then, you know, he'd proceed to start making out with Beth, you know, during the second feature. So I'm looking up and watching the second feature, you know, kind of sidewise through the top of the windshield and one of the first films I remember, you know, I think I'd have been like, gosh, I was seventh grade. Yeah, probably about seventh grade. And, you know, and he was like, you know, yeah, you probably shouldn't watch this because it's one of those slasher films, you know, just hang out in the back seat, you know, whatever, whatever. You know?
Maybe you should have been like, no, you get in the back seat. You're obstructing the view.
That's kind of what I was thinking. But I was like, okay, whatever, man. And so I, you know, sat back there and I was like, whoa. And then, you know, out comes the Friday 13th. And for those of you who have never seen Scream, you have to know, spoiler alert, that Jason Voorhees was not the killer in Friday the 13th, you know? So I watched all of Friday the 13th part 1 and was like, oh, wow.
My earth is now just shattered.
So, but then Friday the 13th Part 2 came along, and I was like, whoa, the hockey mask, the whole nine yards. And then, you know, you'll have the purists that argue, you know, Jason versus Freddy versus Leatherface versus all the other slashers that have come along, Mike Myers. But, man, I'm way into Friday the 13th. Always have been. I mean, I dressed as Jason talking about the haunted house. You know, you want to talk about suffering for your art. I had the real hockey mask that I had special ordered and had painted and all that kind of stuff. And it had the eye blacked out with a, you know, like a piece of fabric.
Right, like that little mesh.
Yeah, but the only thing is that it wasn't like the mesh that you could see through. It was the mesh that literally blocked your vision. So I would get these horrifying migraines by the end of the night doing my Jason get up, but I'd stick it out. And there were some Saturday nights that by 2 or 3 in the morning working the old JC haunted houses that, you know, in my Jason get up, that by the time it was over with, I just would rip the mask off, fall to the ground, and just be like, oh, thank you, God, because my head hurt so bad. Of course, back then I was self-medicating too, so maybe it wasn't as bad as it could have been, but, you know.
By that, you mean that you had an adult beverage or two?
I used to have a few beverages, yeah, back in the day, but it became problematic, and I quit having adult beverages in 2008. So,
and to his credit, because I still enjoy an adult beverage, but you've been on the chip for about 6 years now.
Yeah, clean and sober since July 13, 2008. Yeah.
Which is stellar.
No drugs, no alcohol, no nothing.
And congratulations to you, sir.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you.
You know, this show doesn't usually dip into that territory of, you know, and maybe I'm not sure that Nerds United is a place to discuss the trials and tribulations and then the rising like the phoenix of your dark times. But if you ever want to, you know, to discuss it, man, we can, certainly can, but if you're just ready to move on, we can do that too.
Yeah, no, I mean, at the end of the day, I you know, nerds end up being addicts too. You know, I mean, I got to the point where I was using you know, I was using painkillers, I was doing a lot of drinking and stuff like that, and it just, you know, it didn't do me any good, because I was also trying to live a normal life like a human being. And that they don't mesh well. Addicts make really, really bad family members whenever they're a practicing addict. And, you know, addiction can cost you a lot. And at the end of the day, it cost me a bunch. But it also, by losing what I lost whenever I was still using, it helped me recognize the fact that I was never going to get to any point in life that I wanted to be at unless I got clean. And next thing you know, man, instead of blowing my money on, you know, stupid things like drugs, I'm back into collecting. And, you know, you asked if I ever kind of dropped out of collecting. You know, I probably did for a little while there, and that was probably right smack in the middle of, you know, at my worst point with dealing with, you know, being a regular daily addict.
I feel like we've transcended the normal Nerds United topics and have gone to like the end of the episode of He-Man where it's moral of the story time.
Yeah, kinda.
Don't do drugs. Buy comics.
Yeah. Yeah. Or you know, hey, if you can use drugs and you can use them responsibly, you know, kinda like Chevy Chase said in Caddyshack, you know, use drugs, Danny, every day. Well, what seems to be the problem? I don't know.
Batman was your first love.
Right.
But, I mean, looking around the room here and knowing you like I do, you and I share a bond that is the emerald color.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, the intergalactic cops. I mean, let's think about it. It's like at the end of the day, you have a cocky test pilot who, you know, really doesn't seem like he's that deserving of, you know, being bestowed with any kind of powers or abilities. And next thing you know, Hal Jordan is rocking the ring and is the, you know, Green Lantern of 2814. And it's just like, you know, dude, what in the heck? You know, where did this come from? So that made me want to dig in and really get to reading.
And now, in DC canon, there have been five Green Lanterns from Earth.
Right.
Hal Jordan, obviously, John Stewart, Guy Gardner, Kyle Rayner, and most recently, Simon Baz. And I don't know how long Simon's going to be around. And we were talking about this before we were recording because you were like, "Have you been reading Forever Evil?" No. In fact, Kevin, I apologize. I've not even started Trinity War yet because I don't have them all, and I'm missing some of the important ones, and I don't know what I'm gonna do. So I just read Green Lantern Annual 2. Actually, just read it last night. And spoiler alert, in case you have not read it, it's the end of the Relic storyline, and they win. And they saved the universe, as it happens. And again, spoiler alert, if you don't want me to tell you how Green Lantern Annual 2 ends out the Relic storyline, which is months old, skip ahead a couple minutes. But the entities of the rings of the emotional spectrum, they essentially sacrifice themselves to replenish the emotional reservoirs. Relic is pushed into the wall of the universe, which I think it's funny that the universe has a wall, and he becomes a part of the wall. Kyle Rayner, they think, is lost forever, as he disappears beyond the wall. Lo and behold, he comes back. So for a moment there, we were almost down a Green Lantern from Earth.
Yeah, and they keep threatening to take Kyle away. You ever notice Kyle's like the red shirt from Star Trek? I mean, it's like anytime some really bad stuff is about to go down in the Green Lantern universe, it's always got something to do with poor Kyle Rayner.
My first exposure, if you will, to Kyle Rayner was actually in novel form. It was, and I've got the books. I think it's at the house, but it was a novelization, and I'm not sure how closely it stayed with the comics. But it was, I think Kyle getting kicked out of a bar or a club or whatever. He's in the alley, and Ganthet, one of the guardians of Oa, visits him in the alley and essentially bestows him with the power ring, and off they go. I don't know, again, as the story goes, it's been several years since I've read it. It's probably been 2006 since I read it, so almost 10 years ago. But yeah, Kyle was, he's an artist, and because he's an artist, he can do so much, just like because John Stewart is an architect or an engineer. I think it's architect. The complexities of their constructs. It's just enamoring. Then you've got Hal Jordan, who, the first thing he ever created with his ring was a big green fist, or
Right.
and or a boxing glove, whatever it ended up being. And then Guy Gardner, my mistake is I don't really know Guy Gardner's backstory, except that he was a cop in Baltimore.
Right. Well, there isn't a whole lot to know about Guy as far as his background. Guy is, I mean, if you pick up an issue now, with Guy as a Red Lantern, there really isn't much difference in the characterization except for the fact that he changed rings. Guy always was and always probably will be exactly what you see is what you get. And he is brute force. He is blunt. He is,
Bit of a hothead.
And to the point. And, he doesn't really take any crap, and he doesn't care who you are. That got proven by the number of times that he basically has kind of thumbed his nose at the Guardians. And, the number of times that him and Hal Jordan have come to blows, but you had mentioned Simon Baz, and of all the Green Lanterns so far, dude, I love his costume. I think it's like badass.
It's I'll say this, and I don't mean this certainly in a bad way, but it's different, which makes it stand out. It's kind of got a bit of a cowl to
yeah.
it. Is it only one sleeve?
Yeah, I think they're
short sleeves.
Short sleeves.
All right. Yeah. It seems like there's some exposed arm there, but
yeah,
But Simon's a good one. I was intrigued by his, you know, like what would they do with him after Hal Jordan came back from the dead again?
Again.
Because how many times has that poor man been killed?
Again and again and again. What's funny is I sat down one night and I started Googling how many times has the DC Universe killed this character? How many times? Because, well, I don't want to say I can't say that because you haven't been reading Forever Evil.
Aww.
Anyway, but you know, one of the characters that I Googled in Forever Evil that they may be actually on the brink of being executed. I was like, this has happened before, so I had to go and look it up, and you know. It's amazing if you really dig in and start looking up kill counts as far as killed and resurrected, killed and resurrected, killed and resurrected. DC, a lot of people carry on about Marvel and, you know, if you die in the Marvel universe, you stay dead. Just not true. It's just not true.
I don't think at this point anybody, you know, of the mainstream, you know, names, I mean, obviously, there's going to be random, you know, character killed. But of the mainstream, you know, common knowledge names, there's not anybody who's going to die and stay dead.
No, because, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, the name of the game is to sell books. I mean, if you kill Bruce Wayne, like, for example, which, not to say it's happened before, but it's happened before.
Mm-hmm.
That we've killed off Bruce Wayne, or we believe that Bruce Wayne has died. And the most recent was whenever he basically got unstuck in time.
Yep. I've got the hardbound, hardcover of his return from, you know, time. So I've got it. I don't have, 'cause he got hit by Darkseid's Omega Beam, correct?
Correct.
And it essentially, I guess normally it nukes everybody else, but for the bad, it sent him back into the prehistoric time or something like that. So yeah, I know. And then he has to, you know, battle his way back through the time stream, and I believe it's Lantern and Wonder Woman and Supes are all at this kind of elemental place where they're like, he can't come back. If he comes back, basically the entire system comes crashing down.
Right.
But then you got to remember, it's Batman. Batman will find a way around it, and he did. Spoiler alert, Bruce Wayne's still Batman.
Right. But, you know, and the thing is, it's like with characters that die and return and die and return, you know, we were talking about with the Green Lanterns and how long that Simon may or may not be around. I can tell you point blank that, you know, just like Guy, just like with Hal and Kyle on a couple of occasions, they're going to kill him and bring him back. You know, I mean, I remember one of my favorite storylines from the Green Lantern universe was the Parallax story. Whenever Hal was actually transformed into Parallax. And I was like, dude, this is crazy. There's no way we're ever going to get Hal back. I mean, this is Parallax, you mm-hmm. know? And he's going around and destroying everything. And I was like, whoa, you know, even if Hal is able to become Hal again, and you know, you can't undo all the things that he's done. And I mean, you know, because he had destroyed Coast City. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I was like, whoa. You know, this is over the top stuff, but just, you know, a few years later and everything was back to being perfectly fine.
He had to spend a little time as a Spectre.
Yeah, that was cool too. I enjoyed that. But see, I'm one of those guys that, you know, if I had to list like my, you know, as a guy who is older than 40 now, my favorite characters, I mean, I'm still, of course, I'm Batman, I'm Green Lantern, but I love the Spectre. I love Black Adam. You know, I think that the Sandman, not the Endless Sandman,
Neil Gaiman?
not the Neil Gaiman Sandman, but the actual sleep
Like
glove.
the Silver Age?
Yes, that's one of my faves.
Or would that be Golden Age?
Well,
Probably blended.
he covered, you know, there was a Sandman of the Silver and a Sandman of the Golden Age, but you know, and Flash, I enjoy the Flash, but more than the Flash, I'm kind of weird because I like Professor Zoom.
The Flash of the future.
Yeah, because you know the idea that that Norrin Radd is, you know, he's seen what has become of the Flash and what he does. And so the idea that he's this villain that's come back to stop him before these, you know, toxic events take place. I'm like, he's not really a villain, but he's kind of like a very Venom-like, you know, in the idea that, you know, he's not a good guy, but he's not really a bad guy, you know, kind of that anti-hero sort of thing going on. And then I kind of hope he kills Barry Allen at the end of the day, you know.
Nobody wants Barry Allen to die. We're going to talk about Flash here in a minute, but I wanted to bring up Flashpoint, which I thought as a book that I held in my hands and read and lost for a couple of years to the point where I started texting people. I might have even texted you, but did I happen to loan you Flashpoint? No. Did I? I don't know how many people I asked. Did I loan? No. And it ended up that it was like it had fallen down behind my desk in the room where all my comics are. It had fallen down. It was probably down there collecting dust for a year and a half. And I didn't know about it. But anyway, I pulled it out, read it again. Then I bought the Flashpoint Paradox movie. Flashpoint did a great job of kind of resetting things ahead of New 52.
Yeah, and that was, in fact, in my opinion, that was the birth of New 52. That's what created the launching pad. And it was brilliant. Everything about Flashpoint, everything about Flashpoint Paradox, it was brilliant. Now, I'm not going to say everything that came with New 52 is brilliant. Unfortunately, we got a few stinkers in there, but you know, I digress.
It needs to be said before we go any further, and it's something I should have said, you know, and almost an hour ago, when we started, but it was Free Comic Book Day 2010, I believe. I think it was Free Comic Book Day 2010, and you called me or sent me a message saying, "Hey, I'm over here at Free Comic Book Day. Are you coming?" I'm like, "I don't know what Free Comic Book Day is," because I wasn't reading at the time. I wasn't collecting. I wasn't doing anything. So you knew that I kind of you knew about the Green Lantern tattoo, and you brought me Darkest Night Zero,
Yeah.
which kind of set up and you know, my wife would be like, "Why, Kevin? Why would you have to do that? Look at all this, you know, money that's just tied up in all these books now." But I can't thank you enough for that, because that got me to Blackest Night 1, which got me to everything that had a Blackest Night banner on it,
Yeah.
which got me to everything that had a Brightest Day banner on it,
Yeah.
which you know, and even in, you know, going back into the old canon, you know, the pre-New 52 stuff. You know, I've gone and I've bought a lot of trades, and I'm not, I don't know if I'm, I don't want to speak for you, but I'm a DC guy most
yeah,
of
me too.
Everything that I've got right now is DC. I was just at my comic book shop, which happens to be your comic book shop as well.
Heck yeah, Twilight Comics.
Twilight Comics, Greenmount Crossing Plaza in Shiloh, Illinois. You should go check them out.
no, in all seriousness.
They haven't paid me for that yet.
No, I mean, all seriousness, those guys are knowledgeable. They know their stuff. And if you ask them, you know, hey, have you read this title? They aren't going to BS you. They're going to tell you whether they've read it or not, and whether they liked it or not.
But they've taken good care of us over a number of years. And in fact, I was up there yesterday getting stuff that I, you know, hadn't been there. I think there might have been two Green Lantern issues, which means that I haven't been there in over a month, and that's just shameful of me. But I did tell him, I said, you know what, new Iron Fist is coming out next month, add it to my polls. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is about Iron Fist, kind of a character of intrigue. Mm-hmm. I believe he gets, you know, a portion of his powers, and I'm sure some of this might be rewritten in the new launch, but he killed a dragon or ripped the heart out of a dragon or something like that. So
sometimes you got to rip the heart out of a dragon.
So apparently, so I'm excited for that one. Let's before we get going too far. We talked about Flash, so we got to talk about the CW's Flash, which of course is an offshoot, if you will, of CW's Arrow, because the Barry Allen character was on a few mid-season or pre-mid-season break episodes of Arrow, which, oddly enough, ironically enough, I didn't catch. So I'll have to catch those on Netflix when they come out. But have you been watching Arrow?
I started off watching Arrow, and I've had enough people tell me now that dude, it got better. That I was like, okay, so I'm starting to catch up now on Netflix.
We're talking like Suicide Squad in the next couple episodes.
And that's just it. I have stayed up to date on what's happening in the storyline because of all of the comic blogs and stuff that I read. So I kind of know where we're at. I like it that we're doing Suicide Squad in the next season. I like it that Deathstroke's coming back around. I'm kind of excited at the idea that maybe we're going to see Harley Quinn on the small screen. Because, you know, there's a lot of hinting around at that. Deadshot, obviously, with the Suicide Squad,
he's
one of my faves.
While, yeah.
So I'm like, yeah, man, this is going to be a good time. Whenever I heard that they were going to spin off and that, you know, basically that Barry Allen is already in Arrow, that they're actually going to spin it off and do Flash, I was like, this could be good, you know, or not. And then obviously those first photos came out.
And at first it was just the profile of the face. And then it was, you know, the Flash in that kind of running stance. And then there've been some set photos released. A lot of people are saying, "Oh, hey, look, it's Daredevil, but with lightning bolts."
Now, you know, I don't know.
What is it? Let me ask you this: what is it about the? I'll say DC side, because Marvel. I mean, you see what they've done, be it Marvel owned or like the Sony stuff. I mean, Spider-Man not afraid to be colorful.
You know,
he's not gritty. Arrow's kind of gritty. I mean, you can look at even maybe Man of Steel, kind of a different suit. And then Flash might be the most glaringly obvious. It's a very toned down red, you know, Flash suit. It's not, it's maroon or crimson or whatever you call it. It's not Flash red. What is it about to these producers or production design that, hey, it's like, comics are bright and colorful and, for the most part, fun. What is it about this that's, you know, that they're missing something in that?
The bat is kind of what started all this. I mean, if you go back to, you know, we were talking earlier about Batman 66, blue and gray tights. And then we go up to the Keaton Batman, who, you know, we had the Bat in Black,
Right.
you know, head to toe, Bat in Black with the
The yellow emblem.
yellow emblem, yellow utility belt. But I think that it's based off of, if you look at the success of Dark Knight and how grim and dark and gritty that really was, I think that at the end of the day, there's that's the high watermark. That was, you know, probably the best you can do with a DC product, was the Dark Knight trilogy. I think that that was, as so far, I mean, I'm sure that there's more that can be done. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying
You mean
that.
up to that point or
Yeah.
including Man of Steel?
I'm saying up to that
Okay.
point. And they basically said, okay, this is it. This is going to be our stencil. This is what we're going to base everything off of. And Barry Allen's a joker. Barry Allen is no Batman pun intended. Barry Allen is you know, he's kind of a clown. I mean, he has a good time. He enjoys being the Flash. He enjoys doing what he does, but he's a good time guy. I think that by them making him more dark and brooding, and even alluding to that by having him in the scarlet or crimson costume versus the bright red with the yellow bolts all over it, I think that's DC going, you know, we don't really, I mean, we want to take our chances with a new series, but we don't want to get real risky with it. We're going to make this grim and gritty. Now, Ollie, who with Green Lantern, or I'm sorry, with Green Arrow, you know, Ollie's never been Mr. Happy-Go-Lucky.
Right. Yeah, that character is rife with, I won't say brooding, because then, I mean, then it almost starts getting to Batman territory. But yeah, he's very much been a down-to-earth, serious character,
Well,
despite the fact he looks like Robin Hood.
yeah, I mean, and you know, more than willing to do violence, and you know, Barry is the type that, you know, he'll, when push comes to shove, Barry Allen will do violence. There's no doubt about it. But Barry is, you know, especially fighting his rogues, you know, the that primary core of villains that he faces, you know, with Cold and Trickster and all those.
Mirror Master
Mirror
and
Master, yeah.
Captain Boomerang.
You know, he's always found out ways to basically defeat these guys without becoming excessively violent with them. And I think that if they get too far away from the spirit that is the spirit of the Flash with this, they're just going to have another, you know, lackluster C-grade Batman that doesn't quite have the juice that the bat has. They need to go ahead and be true to the character and let him be Barry Allen. Let there be some levity. Let there be, you know, some good times to it. But I get it. At the end of the day, I don't know if the audience is willing to do that. I know I am. I know that most of the comic readers want that to happen. But you got to be honest with yourself and say, I don't know how many people are actually reading comics these days, you know?
That's true. So let's jump from pictures that, while impressive, were a little bit off their mark as far as what we expected, to a production picture that seems to be spot on. And from that, we're talking NBC's Constantine. That's right, the Hellblazer is going to be on primetime television, and it won't be Keanu Reeves. I know you're disappointed. This guy's actually a Welsh actor. Which is, Christian Bale was Welsh, and he did pretty well. So I'm going to pull up the information here, but the pictures that have been released, Kevin, make this John Constantine look exactly like he's supposed to look.
The fella is blonde, or that dirty blonde hair. You know, even his stubble looks right. The costume's perfect, and you know, he literally jumps off the still images as the kind of Constantine that we've all wanted all along. And as soon as I was reading the article and they got to the part where they said, you know, yes, in fact, he has a Brit accent, I was like, thank you, God of comics.
Matt Ryan is the guy's name who, and don't if you're a sports fan and you've heard that name, it's not the quarterback of the Atlanta Falcons, Matt Ryan,
Well, thank goodness.
because we'd have a lot of interceptions then. But Matt Ryan, who is from Swansea, Wales, and he's just over a year older than me. I look at that sometimes, and I'm like, man, this guy's my age, and look what he's done, and look what I'm doing. Opportunities, I guess, and whatnot, all things aside. But I'm excited. If you haven't seen the pictures for that, you need to check them out because that one looks, again, based on preliminary photographs alone, far more truer to the source material
Oh, yeah.
than the 2005, 2006 movie ever was.
And I may be one of a few people that really, really loved the John Constantine movie that had Keanu Reeves in it. Because trust me, I'm one of the last people on the planet that's going to say, I'm a fan of Keanu Reeves. I was just so excited to see Constantine brought to the screen that. And aspects of the story were spot on. There were aspects of it that were absolutely spot on. And there's aspects of the movie version with Keanu Reeves that I'm really concerned about going into the Constantine series. And that is, and we had talked about it a little bit before we started the show tonight, is NBC going to allow John Constantine to chain smoke? Because those of you who know the character, the Hellblazer character, John smokes like a chimney.
Yeah, you always see him with a cigarette. And in fact, I was reading some Hellblazers, actually that you and Jamie let me borrow, and this has been probably last year sometime. And it's I guess can a quality Constantine be done without the smoking? I mean, what aspect does that add to the character, I guess?
Again, we're probably going to be introducing John Constantine to a whole new audience.
Absolutely.
I'd say probably 10 to 15% of the audience are the diehards like me, who have been reading Hellblazer since basically issue one. Then we've got a whole bunch of people
And
who
for clarification, back when it was a image, no, Dark Horse.
Hellblazer actually started off as
That's right, Vertigo.
Vertigo, DC Vertigo.
Not to be confused with the Constantine that came out with the New 52.
Right.
So you've been on the Hellblazer train for a while.
Yeah. I was reading that, way back. A guy who used to run a comic book shop here in town, Scotty at Scotty's Comics, got me started on Hellblazer. And so he was like, well, here, dude, I got all the back issues. And so we went back and got in the long box and dug through, and he got them out. And I was like, this guy's awesome, and really got into it. But for me, watching Constantine on the small screen will be exciting, whether he's puffing on his. His coffin nails or not, it'll be exciting for me. If you're going to be true to the character, will you? Because depending on, at what stage you're following the Constantine storyline, it got really, really into the importance of his smoking because he was actually afflicted with cancer and was dying.
Which is something they addressed in the movie.
The Keanu Reeves film, yeah.
Right.
And the fact that some things go down in the Hellblazer world with John, and he's never quite on the up and up whenever he's dealing with the otherworldly creatures, the demons and the devils and all the things that he deals with. he's always kind of on the grift. You know, he's got some kind of angle whenever he's dealing with these guys. And that's what I like about it because, you know, you've just got this lowly guy. I mean, he's just a guy. Again, that whole Batman sort of feel where it's like, yeah, he's kind of a magician. He has a little bit of stuff going on as far as, you know, supernatural powers or whatnot. But at the end of the day, he's really just kind of a dude. And if, you know, you're going to take on, you know, some of the highest rungs of the hierarchy of hell, you know, obviously he's got brass balls, you know.
Didn't he get his first appearance in a Swamp Thing?
Yeah, he showed up in Swamp Thing. It was actually during the incredibly epic run that was
Alan Moore.
Alan Moore's run on Swamp Thing, which, by the way, I had read recently that, and I apologize. For those of you who have never listened to Big Kev's View, you'll have to understand. I have a tendency to be a little over all over the road because I'm kind of an ADD guy. They asked Alan Moore to come back and write Swamp Thing again, and he said that he would never work for allegedly he would never work for DC Comics again.
Really?
Yeah.
He kind of had a bad taste in his mouth for whatever reason, but I don't know the story.
Alan Moore hates everything.
That's about what I gathered.
Alan Moore hates everything. And that's really all there is to it. He writes some of the greatest comics in the history of the industry. And then whenever the company that he wrote it for tries to capitalize on this incredible story that Alan Moore has written, he's like, no, leave my work alone. Don't turn it into movies. Don't allow anyone to pick up where I left off.
Right.
You know, that's my story.
Which is fine for him to think that, but I mean, you got to go back to, you know, like well, it's kind of a debate that's still raging. Marvel versus Stan Lee, or actually Stan Lee versus Marvel. Stan Lee doesn't own those characters. He created them. He, you know, made them what they are, but he doesn't. And I'm not taking Marvel's side. I'm just saying how the situation is.
The truth is that when you go to work for one of the big comic houses, whether it be Marvel, whether it be DC, you have to understand that you are there in their employ. And whenever you create those characters, you are not creating those characters for you. You are creating those characters for the fans that are going to buy these books under the banner of whichever comic house you're working for, whether it be the House of Marvel or whether it be the House of DC. And at the end of the day, if you decide you're going to pack up your toys and go home, that's fine. But guess what?
Your toy, well, you can pack up your toys, but they're staying put and you're going home.
At the end of the day, that's how it works. And Alan Moore doesn't want to play by the rules because Alan Moore feels like that he's above the law. It just doesn't work that way. I mean, it never has. And if he wants to, he has to start his own title. That's how we ended up with Image in the 90s. You know, Rob Liefeld was basically like, I don't want to work for these guys. I don't want to create all these characters that are going to be not mine. So he went out and he created Image with Jay Lee and all these guys, and they created an incredible lineup of books, and then they mismanaged it straight to hell.
And no, you're absolutely right. It was to the point where some of the guys who got, you know, helped form it were running away from the dumpster fire.
Yeah.
So, which led us to some of the, you know, great work that, well, for example, Jim Lee has done for both Marvel and DC.
Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of those Image characters that started off as, you know, being proprietary of, you know, Image Comics and these artists that created them, we've seen them make their way into other universe, the DC universe with Grifter. I mean, Grifter was part of a super team from Image.
Wildcats.
Yeah. And, you know, next thing you know, wham, bam, he's in the DC Universe.
He was in the animated movie Flashpoint Paradox.
Absolutely.
So.
And the other thing about that, by the way, just talking about the train, because I collected Image in the 90s. I was heavy, heavy Image reader. Got a ton of the books. I mean, and I was picking them all up on the regular. The only guy who seemed to survive all of that mess was McFarlane. As far as being able to, you know, pick up his toys and go home. Okay, well, I'm going to take Spawn and I'm going to keep going and doing my own thing. You know, and he was able to do that because he was the only one of those kids, and they were kids. They were all young. They were, you know, in their 20s, and some of them were in their early 30s. But, I mean, these guys were running a multi-million-dollar company and, you know, being the top of the top and you know, for month after month, they were kicking Marvel and DC's ass on the regular. And then, you know, wham, bam, it's over, you know. But good for McFarlane. He survived.
The well's dried up a little bit. Kevin, before we get out of here, you've got some comic-inspired ink. Mm-hmm. And one of them is just, I say globally known, but that might be a bit of a stretch. Anybody who, and it goes back to a person we were just talking about, Alan Moore, and the Killing Joke. And it is a picture of the Joker, the iconic image of him kind of grasping at his hair with the ha-ha-has all above his head. So you got that. In fact, you just got that within the last few months.
Yeah, I'm actually doing a full sleeve on my left arm. And we started off with the spray-painted bat on the inside of my forearm. And then I knew that I was going to come over and do the flip side of that with the Joker. And then we're going to run bats flying through the air in between the two with green Joker gas laced with the bats. Coming up onto my upper arm, we're going to have some more of the more iconic images of Joker and the Batman. But yeah, I'm dedicating my entire left arm to the struggle between the bat and the Joker. Because, you know, I mean, dude, for as much as enjoyment and entertainment as they've given me in life, I'm more than happy to wear them on my body and until the worms eat it away.
I had never asked about the Batman tattoo on your inside forearm for the longest time, actually, until you just explained it. I always kind of thought it had that Batman Begins after the Scarecrow gets hit with the gas and he sees the big frightening Batman with like the
big gaping mouth.
Yeah, the gaping mouth and the stuff, you know, frothing out of it. Mm. That's kind of where I thought that was. So knowing that a spray paint is, it makes me sleep a little bit easier at night now.
Yeah, because I, you know, and it was one of those deals that, by the way, the artist who did my arm, Carl at Daddy-O's is a phenomenal guy in Centralia, Illinois. And I would recommend him to anyone, but, that wants to get ink. But, you know, at the end of the day, I have to ask you this. You've read The Killing Joke.
Yes. In fact, I just reread it within the last, probably within the last month or so. Just wanted to, you know, no pun intended, kill some time. And it's like, you know, man, I haven't read Killing Joke in a while. So I'm going to pick it up, read it in an evening. And, you know, it of course, I didn't read it when it came out. I mean, I didn't read it till I was, well, you know, in my late 20s initially.
Right.
My comics that I got as a kid were mostly X-Men. You know, my parents, they never, like, went through and be like, maybe he's too young for this type of thing. But I really didn't know what was good. But I knew X-Men was a cartoon show, you know, a cartoon series. So it's probably pretty good. So, yeah, in my adult years, I've been trying to go back and get some of these things that either I was too young for or just was unaware of. So Killing Joke, I read it probably for the first time within the last 5 years and read it, like I said, most recently a couple weeks ago.
Well, I heard Smith on Fat Man on Batman, with the episode where they talk about at the end of The Killing Joke as to whether or not the bat actually kills the Joker.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think he killed him?
Did that take place after Death in the Family? Or would that have been before? Or was that standalone?
That was actually in the timeline. That would have been after Death in the Family. That would have been after the beating death of Jason Todd.
That's right, because I think even they referenced that in mm-hmm. some of those.
Because
I'd have to say no, just because if there's anybody who has the ability, I think, to show restraint, it is Batman. Mm-hmm. Even though, you know, everything inside of him says, I need to put an end to this.
Right.
There's that one little, like, safety valve in his mind that says, I don't want to become that.
The self-control.
Right.
Well, and the thing was, and it bothers me. I actually have spent many days thinking about this. You know, whether or not the bat kills him at the end of The Killing Joke. Because, damn you, Kevin Smith, and the whole bringing in, you know, the writer and going, oh, no, he killed him. You know, and it was like he reaches out at the end. They're both laughing. He reaches out and he breaks the Joker's neck. And that's what makes the laughing stop. And I'm like, ah. Oh. I mean, he could, but would he? And I'm like, I don't know. It's been haunting me, and that's why I asked. Mm-hmm. Because
it's funny that in Dark Knight Returns,
mm-hmm.
Joker kind of offs himself,
right?
You know, I mean, he's got the batarang in his eye, but he, you know, in his laughing frenzy, he's like, you know, this is how it was always going to end. You know, the two of us probably dying side by side, you know, mm-hmm. type of thing. And is, which, I mean, that's the what I've found. Dark Knight Returns. That's a lot to process. That's a lot to read.
Yeah.
And it's a great read, but it is a lot easier to pop that Blu-ray in and hit play.
Yeah, you know, and I enjoy the videos. I like watching them. I mean, no doubt about it. I liked the fact that they actually brought those to life now. But I still, as far as Dark Knight Returns, I still favor the man. Give me the trade anytime, because it's just, there's something about being able to go from panel to panel in a story that is as deep and as rich as that story is, and there's just so much meat on that story, man. I mean, it's just like that.
Like I said, it's a lot to digest.
Oh, dude, it's terrific in every aspect, and you know, it's just like with Killing Joke. Like I was saying, I mean, it makes you think, and it makes you ask yourself questions, and it makes you ask yourself questions sometimes that there isn't an answer to, no matter what. I mean, even when the writer of the story goes, yeah, dude, he totally killed him at the end of Killing Joke, you're like, no,
he couldn't have.
He couldn't have, because, you know, he has this no-kill policy. He doesn't kill. I mean, he won't do it. So, anyway.
Kevin, we've had a great conversation. Hopefully it's not our last on Nerds United, but it's about that time where we've got to – got to at least put a pin in it until the next time we get to the Kev Cave. And I have another one. By the way, usually I drink ski during the show, or at least in preparation for the show. But I did not have a ski with me. So you offered, and I happily took you up on a San Pellegrino.
Yeah.
Because now I feel like high-end and I feel spoiled. The Italian sparkling grapefruit beverage from Concentrate, and it was delicious. So thank you very much for the high-end.
That's about all we drink around here. We be drinking the San Pellegrino, sir.
Thanks for the high-end beverage, Kevin. Want to remind everybody again, this Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Cape Comic-Con. You can go to cape-con.com. They finally have the schedule posted, both for the Comic-Con part and also the gaming con schedule. It does begin Friday evening, 4 o'clock. That's when the doors open. A lot of family involvement. They have children's drawing event on Saturday. They have a kids 9 and under costume contest. They have a regular costume contest. By the way, the doors open Saturday, 10 o'clock. I will be there. I won't be the only one. Jim Cornette will be there. He'll have the Jim Cornette Experience. That is going on 8 to 10 o'clock that night. Does he tell stories from his life in professional wrestling and answering questions from you, the fans? Check that out if you're interested. $20 for the Jim Cornette Experience. It's just going to be a great time. And wrapping things up on Sunday with just good times. Some of the other artists, Shane Davis will be on a panel there, as well as Michelle Dalecki. That's going to be at 1 o'clock Sunday afternoon. Looking forward to seeing you down there. I will have my recorder, and by that I mean my iPhone, which means that I will also be stepping away every 45 minutes to go plug it in for charging purposes. But that will do it for this. I hope to see you down at the Cape Comic-Con, Cape Girardeau, the arena building. Get information more, cape-con.com, and be listening for more good things from Nerds United. Kevin, I was at Twilight Comics yesterday, and Brian was generous enough to give me a Walking Dead number one Wizard World St. Louis Comic Con exclusive to give away to the listeners.
Oh, nice.
I don't know how to give it away. I don't know what kind of contest they need to have for it. I tried having a contest a month ago. I said, hey, I'm looking for a new cover photo for my Facebook page. So drop your suggestions there. So let's bring that back. Let's remind the listeners. I'm looking for a cover photo for my Facebook page for Nerds United. Make it comic book or comic movie related. And I'll pick the best one, or maybe we'll have a vote of the top three. And that person will win the Walking Dead number one, the exclusive edition from the St. Louis Wizard World Comic Con. That's fair.
That's a desirable book.
I think so. And now I know that you have seen this most recent episode, and I have not. So no spoilers, please.
Yeah, no, no.
I'm gonna go home and watch that right now. Hopefully, my wife's still awake.
Oh, it's good times.
Walking Dead, and who knows what's gonna follow? Probably sleep, because at the Mahachko house, sleep always takes precedence.
Yeah.
All right. Kevin, thank you again so much for allowing me into your home, into your Kev Cave. And we need a sign now that says Kev Cave.
Yeah. Well, it's always a pleasure, man. Anytime you and I sit down and crack open microphones, it's a good time.
And it's usually troublesome.
Yeah.
Can you believe now, when we were recording Big Kev's View, and of course, every time I go to end this podcast, something we keep talking. When we would record Big Kev's View, there'd be some on the panel, and I'm not going to mention any names, but it was oftentimes me, be like, I don't know, do you think an hour's too long for a podcast? Maybe. We're over an hour and a half now, buddy.
You know what? But the thing is,
we have more stories we could tell.
As long as you keep it moving, everything's fine. But no, I think an hour and a half's fine. It's just sometimes with my show, it got to where it almost felt a little forced.
And if you have listened to Big Kev's View, or if you want to, BigKev'sView.fm or BigKev.fm. Or,
yeah, BigKev, www.BigKev.fm.
There you go. You can check that out. But go through some of the archives. But there's a long-running joke on Big Kev's View, and it had to do with eating meals in Indochina.
Right.
And the only way you could avoid eating dog was if you got there after breakfast and left before lunch.
Correct.
So with that, Kevin, thank you very much for allowing me into your Kev Cave, into your home. I will now depart it so that you can go and be with your family.
Wonderful.
and all of your bulldogs.
Always a pleasure.
And next time we'll plug more of your bulldogs because of all the great work you and your wife do for the rescues and the bullies.
Righto.
So we'll do that next time we visit with Kevin Fridellos on Nerds United. This has been episode number, I don't keep track anymore, at least in the recorded version. So we'll see you next time with Cape Con coverage on Nerds United, a Jittery Monkey podcast.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.